This is our annual Prophecy Update Sunday. We'd done this ever since the beginning of the church because I just used to like what Papa Chuck used to do. He used to do them on New Year's Eve. He would do these prophecy updates, and I remember Deb and I used to go down, and we rarely got it into the sanctuary because it'd be so many people packed in there. We'd usually be sitting in the fellowship hall and watching on TV screens, but I just always loved how every year you would take time and kind of refresh us for the events that have been going on and kind of tie it into prophecy to just give us an idea of where we are in the prophetic clock. And so we have done that. We used to do it on New Year's Eve, but a few years back we transitioned it onto the first Sunday of the year. And so I'm just going to do four things. This has been quite an amazing year, and I'm just going to touch on four areas I think that are quite significant. First area I'm going to call it disasters, and we're going to look at a bunch of things that collectively fall into this category of disasters that seem to be signs of the times. Jesus said, "For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines, pestilences, earthquakes." That's disasters in various places. All these are the beginnings of sorrows. You'll see all kinds of stuff through the book of Revelation as things are unfolding. CNBC, you're going to notice I'm not going to always quote Fox News in case you think I'm biased. CNBC, I guess you don't get much more liberal than that. This is December 26th. This is just a few weeks ago. They reported that 2017 was a devastating year with the amount of catastrophic floods, wildfires, earthquakes, affecting millions across the globe. Global Insurance pegs this as the third most expensive year in insurance history. I mean, just remind you, just in case you're going, what? This year's been good to me. This year's been good. Well, in June and July, it was flooding in China. In August, it was floods and landslides in Sierra Leone. Also in August was Hurricane Harvey. Remember Hurricane Harvey? Swamping 136,000 structures. In August, India was flooded, affecting 24 million people. In August and September, Hurricane Irma walloped Puerto Rico, Cuba, and Florida. In September, Mexico, we did hardly even paid attention to this one. Mexico was hit by not one but two huge earthquakes, killing over 400 people and affecting millions. In September, more than 40 million people were affected by a monsoon that hit Bangladesh, India, and Nepal. In September, Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico for a second time they were hit. And our team that went there got a taste of all that happened there. In October, wildfires hit Northern California, killing at least 11, destroying more than 1,500 buildings. In November, Typhoon Damrey hit Vietnam, killing scores of people and causing more than $1 billion in damages. In November, a 7.3 magnitude earthquake hit Iran, killing more than 500 people. I'm not even sure that even hit most news places. In November, a volcano in Bali forced thousands to evacuate. In December, Southern California was hit with wildfires. The Thomas Fire now ranks as the largest in California history, scorching more than 280,000 acres. I don't know if you know it, it's still not contained. I think as of Friday, it was 92%. And maybe with the rains, it'll all be gone, okay? But still, it's just an amazing year, an amazing year. I think some of us are more than a little disaster fatigued. Are you? I'm just like, I had it about up here, up to disaster. Another one hits, I'm just like, just turn off the TV. I don't want to hear about it, you know. Have you kind of felt like that? I wonder if, I think it should maybe cause us to wonder what's going on. Have you asked that question? When you've seen all this stuff, what's going on? Some people might want to say, well, it's all about global warming. And I'm not even, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But that still doesn't negate the fact that something's going on. Does God have your attention? Does God have your attention? Matthew says it's the beginning of birth pain. Second area I want to talk about, I talk about this just about every year, the Magog War. That comes from Ezekiel 38 and 39. I'm not going to take you through the passage, but if you want extra credit homework, read through Ezekiel 38 and 39. Wild passage. I think that this fits into the timeline in our future. I think it precedes the rapture, and I believe it precedes the tribulation. There will be an alliance of nations that will invade Israel from the north. And we'll go over some of these nations. God will step in and miraculously deliver Israel. And then at the end of the passage, God's Spirit is poured out on the nation. That's why I believe it's tied to the pre-rapture, because God's Spirit is poured out on Israel. God starts using Israel again as his chosen people, and that's around the time I think that we'll be out of here, I think. That's another aside. The Magog War involves some of the following nations. It involves the nation of Turkey, and if you read the passage, Turkey is listed as Gomer and Beth Togarmah. Turkey is currently led by a fellow named Erdogan. It looks like Erdogan, it's Erdogan, President Erdogan. And he has a goal in life. He wants to be perceived as the leader of the Muslim world. He is extremely anti-Israel. And while some of the Muslim world has been kind of surprisingly quiet about President Trump's announcement to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, Erdogan was the quickest, the first to speak up, the loudest to protest, even has promised that he's going to build his embassy in Jerusalem, but it'll be an embassy to the Palestinians in Jerusalem. Just troublemaker. It is thought that because Turkey right now is going through some internal problems, that Erdogan is using the Jerusalem issues to get his country to stop looking at what's going on in their internal problems. That's something, by the way, that happens in nations. You know, we have trouble at home. Let's make a war to make everybody think about the war so we don't think about the trouble at home. A second nation that's involved in this war is Iran. Iran is one of the few Muslim nations that have publicly and repeatedly stated over and over that their goal in life is to destroy the nation of Israel. When President Trump was elected, the Iranians realized that they were in trouble. 2.5 months ago, Trump has promised to get rid of the Iran nuclear deal that President Obama set up. 2.5 months ago, he authorized a 3-month extension. He hasn't decided to just toss it out. He authorized a 3-month extension regarding the nuclear capabilities deal, and while he studied the issues. Trump has threatened to completely cancel Obama's Iran deal unless Congress imposes more sanctions on Iran. And Congress hasn't done this yet. Trump will have to declare his next certification or continuance of this Iran thing by January 11th. That's when the last certification runs out. So that's this week. So that's something to keep an eye on, because a lot of the stuff that's happening in Iran isn't really hitting the news right now. Instead, people are distracted by, you know, books about Trump and how, you know, whatever, all this kind of stuff. But watch this, just to be curious. I'm not trying to make you all scared. I'm just saying this is something to watch. Iran is currently going through significant internal strife. There have been large demonstrations held all around the country. Are you aware of this? Anybody's aware of this? Okay, it's only partly hit the news. Iranian youth are trying to bring down the government. They're not as big as the demonstrations that were about 8 or 9 years ago, but they're significant. The protesters are upset that the country is in such economic difficulty, while the mullahs, the leaders, are living in luxury. There's high unemployment. 35% of the country is living under the poverty line. As of yesterday, There were more than 1,000 people arrested, and at least 21 have been killed as of yesterday. That was the latest statistics. This next clip is from January 2nd. Here comes a clip.
The mass protests in Iran are showing no signs of ending as they continue to draw the attention of world leaders. At least 21 people have been killed and 450 arrested as unrest spreads to cities across the Islamic Republic. President Trump called the Iranian leadership brutal and corrupt and warned that the U.S. is watching the unrest closely. Elizabeth Palmer reports.
In some of the worst violence so far, protesters attacked a police station last night about 200 miles south of Tehran. There's no way to know who was shooting, but state media say 6 people died. Activist videos from the last 6 days show wounded demonstrators. Protesters in the capital chanting death to the dictator. And jeering crowds vandalizing pictures of Iran's supreme religious leader, Ali Khamenei. He broke his silence today to put the blame on, as he put it, enemies of the Islamic Republic who have used money, weapons, and intelligence services to create problems. That hints at foreign interference. But Iran's moderate president, Hassan Rouhani, said today that the protesters are just fed up with poverty and lack of freedom. That's exactly what you hear on the street. My 3 kids are doctors and engineers, says this father, and not one of them has a job. Even though my husband and I both work, says this woman, we're under constant pressure from high prices. Life is tough. This is the most serious uprising in Iran since the massive election protests in 2009 that were so brutally put down. Back then, the discontent was focused in Tehran. This time, it's countrywide.
So, where will all of this lead? It might lead to a change in the government. That would be a cool thing. I would hope that that's what would happen. Some have suggested that the hardline Iranian leaders might try to divert attention of their people from their internal problems by attacking Israel. And Hamas in the Gaza Strip, that's the Palestinian leadership in the Gaza Strip, and Hamas is supported by, you want to guess who? Iran. They're supported by Iran. They've, in recent days, have started firing mortar rounds into Israel again. They do this from time to time. But it's, you know, who knows what's happening. I want you to be aware of what's happening in the world. And to understand that actually, it kind of ties into some stuff. It has the potential of starting Ezekiel 38 and 39. Another player is Russia, known as Magog or Rosh in Ezekiel. Ezekiel's prophecy puts Russia in the lead role in the invasion. Now, I don't know if you've followed what's going on in Syria. There was a Syrian civil war, but then it kind of got hijacked by ISIS coming in, and then everybody decided to turn against ISIS. And we've had people helping in there, and Russia has played a big role in Syria. And now I think they're kind of calling the ISIS thing over. That ISIS is on the run, they're gone. I think they've taken back all the territory. But Russia hasn't pulled out of Syria. They've stayed. And in fact, they've signed long-term deals to have bases in Syria for the next 50 years. Those of you who've been to Israel, there's at one part when we're up in Dan, we look out over the fields. There's Syria, we'll say. There's Syria. It's the neighbor just to the north of Israel. And Russia is there. In November, this is interesting, this is November, Putin met with the leaders of Iran on the left, that's Rouhani, that's the moderate president, and Turkey, there's Erdogan on the right. They held a victory summit, this is about beating up on ISIS, and they were discussing the future of Syria. They're already connected, the players are already connected. You see that? Okay. Two more players in the passage in Ezekiel 38 are Sudan and Libya. And let me just simply say that the Turks have just signed several deals with the Sudanese, and the Russians have just signed deals with Libya. And so it's when the Bible talks about these nations all coming against Israel, it's kind of fascinating because they got links with each other. It's not like he's picking, you know, that Mexico is going to, invade, Israel or something else. We're talking about nations that are currently against Israel. Now, why would these nations invade Israel? Ezekiel gives a reason. Ezekiel 38:12, it says they come to take plunder and to take booty. And so, in other words, there's something that they want in the land of Israel. Part of that could involve natural gas. Was it 5-6 years ago where they discovered huge, huge, absolutely huge natural gas reserves off the coast of Haifa. And Israel is now like set for life when it comes to energy because of this stuff. In fact, they're exporting natural gas. Some suggest the booty might simply be the fact that Israel is right now quite the financial prize at the moment. This is from December 25th, Jerusalem Post. Israel GDP per capita has soared from $3,000 per person in 1948 to almost $39,000 in 2017. Just to put it in contrast, if Israel's GDP per capita is $39,000, Russia is $26,000 per capita. So they're doing pretty good. And if you look up all the charts that show the world nations and their economy, Israel's like, in the top 20, 30 out of 200, something like that. They're doing pretty good. Israel's foreign exchange reserves have soared from less than $1 billion in 1960 to $100 billion today. Their foreign exchange reserves, their exports are an impressive $100 billion. Israel's high-tech industry is in the top 5 of the world. They are an awful lot of stuff. How many of you got cell phones? Let me see your cell phones. An awful lot of the tech that's in your cell phones came from Israel. But even more, I found an even more important reason why they might want to conquer because of Wonder Woman. Gal Gadot, she's from Israel. She's got 22 million followers on the internet. Why not? I'm just kidding. Okay. Another nation that's not a part of this group but's mentioned is Saudi Arabia. One last little nugget in the passage. Ezekiel 38:13, Sheba and Dedan, which is Saudi Arabia, Sheba and Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish and all their young lions will say to you, say to this group of nations, have you come to take plunder? Ezekiel makes it sound like they're going to raise some kind of a protest against the invaders. But I got to tell you, for a long time, this has just been kind of like, yeah, really? Saudi Arabia not joining in on beating up on Israel? Saudi Arabia's had close ties with us, but they've stayed anti-Israel. This is from December 25th, Jerusalem Post article. Under the young Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Saudi Arabia is turning from being an enemy to Israel towards being supportive in order to stand together against the growing Iranian threat. The Saudi Arabia movement towards Israel has also drawn in the United Arab Emirates and the smaller Arab states towards Israel away from Iran. Now, 2 years ago, I got to tell you, who would have ever thought of that? And yet here we are. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that cool? You ought to be excited. You ought to be really excited. There you go. Thank you, Angie. Okay, let's go to number 3, big section. Talk about North Korea. I imagine some of you are aware of Mr. Kim Jong-un and the state of things between the U.S. and North Korea. If you are aware of how things are between us and North Korea. Okay, I believe that it is believed that North Korea is close to the ability of launching nuclear warheads to hit the U.S. I've heard various reports from they are there to they're 7 months away to whatever. They keep doing rocket launches and nuclear tests and all like that. There are plenty of news articles talking about the inevitability of nuclear war between the U.S. and North Korea, and I'm not sure how much of that is a bluster and how much of it is real. The U.S. is trying to employ sanctions against the rogue regime and has been trying to up the pressure on China to step up and do the same. China has been kind of dragging their feet. Till Friday, China said that they're finally going to put the knuckles down on North Korea. Here's a video clip.
Let's turn to Gordon Chang, foreign affairs journalist and author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Will they actually do it, I suppose, is the question.
Only if the Trump administration forces them to comply with UN sanctions. This has really been the story of China. You know, when sanctions are put in place by the UN, the Chinese make a big show of complying. So, for instance, they'll issue these pronouncements. They'll actually do something for a couple months, and then when the United States isn't paying attention, they go back to doing the old way of things, which is supporting North Korea to help busting sanctions. This will be the same thing unless the administration makes it clear to the Chinese they can't get away with it. Now, on December 28, you had that tweet from President Trump saying, look, the Chinese have been caught red-handed. We're going to see what Trump does, whether he actually enforces this or not.
The talks, the hotline between North and South Korea had been shut down, I guess, for the better part of a couple of years. Now at least they're talking, they're scheduling talks for next week. Do you see this as hopeful or just chatter?
Yeah, I think this is hopeful, of course. When you have the North and South Koreans talking to each other, they're not killing each other. So that's a really good thing. The problem here is Kim Jong-un, in his New Year's address, really hinted that sanctions were starting to bite. And that's the reason why he's talking to the South Koreans. He wants the South Koreans to start to shovel them some money. They can't do that because of UN sanctions, which means there's a history of North Korean overtures followed by military provocations. And the other thing, Shep, you know, I'm sure Kim Jong-un is looking at what's happening in Iran. Iran pays the North Koreans about 10% of their GDP. That's an enormous number. If there's a new government in Tehran, that might go away. Kim Jong-un then will get desperate.
What the United States wants, and probably what the world wants, is for the North Koreans to begin dismantling their nuclear arsenal. That's what the president has demanded, dismantle your nuclear arsenal. And now Jennifer Griffin is reporting that if there aren't signs of said dismantling, that the United States may take a preemptive strike on the Korean Peninsula. What sort of effect would that knowledge have on the North Korean dictator?
I think that they would try, first of all, to try to deter the U.S. with, you know, this thing about in the New Year's address about the button on my desk, we can reach the entire U.S. mainland. That's deterrence. What they're saying is, don't attack me. The other thing that's going to happen, though, is that China is not going to let that occur. In August, Beijing signaled that if the U.S. attacked first, China was going to come in on North Korea's side. That could take many forms. So, for instance, if we strike North Korea first, you could see China cause trouble in the South China Sea. You could see the Russians go after the Baltics. The Iranians will do something. So we could see Asia really be embroiled.
That sounds like a world war, the way you just described it.
It's close. It's Asia being embroiled on both sides. And so this thing could spread very fast. And that's the real danger here. When you have Senator Lindsey Graham saying, oh, you know, if there are deaths, they're only going to be over there. Well, that's one scenario. But another scenario is that this just spreads. And it can spread to the U.S. homeland because the Chinese and the Russians could actually get into a nuclear exchange with the United States. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying that's a possibility that the hawks need to talk about.
Now, I'm not trying to make us all afraid of nuclear war or anything like that. It's not where I'm going. And I'm not sure that North Korea is even spoken of directly in the scriptures, but they're related to things that are. In particular, did you notice how Russia and Iran were mentioned? Because Russia has a stake in North Korea, and Iran has trade deals with North Korea. So all this kind of stuff kind of plays together that it's just very fascinating. Last section I want to talk about is Jerusalem. On December 6th, President Trump declared Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel, and that we would eventually move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, though that's actually probably more than a few years away from actually happening, because it takes time to move an embassy. Here's the announcement.
After more than two decades of waivers, we are no closer to a lasting peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It would be folly to assume that repeating the exact same formula would now produce a different or better result. Therefore, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering. That is why, consistent with the Jerusalem Embassy Act, I am also directing the State Department to begin preparation to move the American Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This decision is not intended in any way to reflect a departure from our strong commitment to facilitate a lasting peace agreement. There will, of course, be disagreement and dissent regarding this announcement. But we are confident that ultimately, as we work through these disagreements, we will arrive at a peace and a place far greater in understanding and cooperation. This sacred city should call forth the best in humanity, lifting our sights to what it is possible, not pulling us back and down to the old fights that have become so totally predictable. It is time for all civilized nations and people to respond to disagreement with reasoned debate, not violence. And it is time for young and moderate voices all across the Middle East to claim for themselves a bright and beautiful future.
Now, in response, riots broke out in Jerusalem and Bethlehem. The Palestinians want Jerusalem to be their capital, not Israel's. On December 15th, so the announcement was December 6th, December 15th, Al Jazeera reported that solidarity rallies have spread as far as Istanbul, Jakarta, Karachi, Rabat, Chicago, and Tokyo. In the Middle East, protesters took to the streets of Amman, Beirut, occupied West Bank, Jerusalem, and Gaza. On December 17th, the UN Security Council voted 14-1 to condemn the announcement, with the U.S. vetoing the resolution. On December 21st, in a non-binding resolution, 128 nations in the UN voted to call the U.S. to reverse its position. 35 nations abstained from the vote. Only 9 nations voted against it. So, the prophet Zechariah, in around 550 BC, he was speaking about the end times when he wrote, and in fact, I actually skipped a verse. It starts in Zechariah 12:2, says this: "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Jerusalem and Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all the nations of the earth are gathered against it." To me, that kind of sounds like what's happening, doesn't it? Does that sound like that to you? This is the end times. We're getting close, gang. So what? So what? What's the deal about all this? What's the big deal about the second coming? So what? So what? Let's just go home and, you know, and forget about it. No, it ought to change the way we live. Three things. First is we ought to keep growing. 1 John chapter 3 says, "Beloved, now we are children of God. It has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him. We shall be, for we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who has this hope in Him purifies himself just as He is pure." Our hope is that one day we're going to be with Jesus. And that hope of being with Jesus ought to motivate us to want to be more like Jesus. And He's pure. He's without sin. Now, we're never going to be completely pure till we see Him. But it ought to motivate us to want to work at cleaning things up, to grow in purity. Don't get complacent about your walk. keep growing because Jesus is coming back. He's coming back. Second thing is to keep loving. Peter writes this, "But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers, and above all things, have fervent love for one another. For love will cover a multitude of sins." You see how we did that? The end of all things are at hand, so pray, and you know what? Love each other. Jesus wants his church to be known by love. He said, "By this will all men know you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." But the problem is that love could kind of fade. It does, doesn't it? It fades. Our love for God fades at times. If you don't keep cultivating it, if you don't keep fanning the flames, your love for God will fade. Your love for people will fade. And we call things the honeymoon period, when everything's all, you know, nice, bright and shiny, and everything's all fun. But you know, it doesn't always stay that way. You have to cultivate. You have to work at it. Love fades. The church at Ephesus was going through that. Revelation 2:4, Jesus says, "Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love." The end is near, beloved. Get back to loving God. Get back to loving each other. And last thing is to keep serving. We read this morning. "Who then is that faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing." Not the servant that he's just thinking about serving, but he's doing it. Temptation can be, and this is what Jesus talks about in this passage, the temptation can be thinking, you know what? Pastor Rich has been talking about Jesus coming back for years, and Chuck for years beyond that. You know, it just ain't going to happen. I'm just going to take a year off. I don't think so. Jesus said the master of that servant will come at an hour he doesn't know. No, we want to get back. It's the wise servant. It's the wise servant who is longing to hear Jesus say, "I've lost control." Best picture of the whole thing. Don't look at me, he says. Hit your space bar. Let's see if you can do it. Hit your space bar. There you go. One more. One more space bar. You can do it. There we go. It's the wise servant that is longing to hear Jesus say one day, "Well done, good and what? Faithful servant." Friends, keep serving, because he's coming back. He's coming back. He's coming back. You know, you can get so distressed and upset about the fearful things that we're talking about. Don't do that. Think about Jesus coming back, because that's the goal. These things are just to remind you that he's coming back. You will see him face to face one day, and we want to be ready for him. We want to be faithful. We want to be loving. We want to be serving. Let's stand and pray. And so, Lord, we ask in Jesus' name that you draw us to yourself. I would pray, Lord, that if there's some of us here today who have never taken that step to open our heart to you, I pray, Lord, that today's the day that they give it serious attention. Friend, he's coming back. Are you going to be ready for him? Open your heart to Jesus. Tell him that you need him. Tell him that you want to know him. And maybe, friend, you've been away. Maybe you've been sloughing off. Maybe you've been thinking, "I'm just going to coast for a while." Friend, friend, let's be ready. Sharpen us, Lord. Help us to grow, purify ourselves, and to be useful to you. In Jesus' name.